Scripture reading today is Numbers 27:15-20. Numbers 27, chapter 27, verses 15-20. Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, "Let the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation, who shall go out before them and come in before them, who shall lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord may not be as sheep that have no shepherd." So the Lord said to Moses, "Take Joshua, the son of Nun, a man who, in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him. Make him stand before Eleazar the priest and all the congregation, and you shall commission him in their sight. You shall invest him with some of your authority, that all the congregation of the people of Israel may obey."
Bravo, Joseph, for Eleazar. How about that? Bravely done. I didn't notice, but Sherry Carr is here as well. I mentioned several others in the announcements, but it is so good to see you back with us after your illness. You have bounced back, it looks like, so that's wonderful. We're starting a series today, which is it was requested by the eldership. So I think some of you are aware, I mention it every so often, I have kind of a schedule of passages I cover in preaching, and I map them out for about a year in advance. Currently, I'm mapped out through November. The elders were asking for a series, so I'm off script for 6 weeks. I don't even know what to do with myself. I'm off script for 6 weeks. I'm going to cover this topical series, although I'm still going to cover it primarily from some passages, primarily from the New Testament, although the first one will come from the Old Testament, the first of the six. The other five will be based on the New Testament teaching about leadership. The topic I was asked to cover relates to leadership in the congregation, to the qualifications and the work and the appointment of elders and deacons and their roles and responsibility. Appreciate Edwin's prayer related to that a little bit earlier. And the text that came to mind, I'm lifting it right out of context without any apology, is Jeremiah chapter 3 and verse 15. When I say I'm lifting it out of context, I just mean that I'm not discussing. There's a whole story going on in Jeremiah 3. I'm not misapplying it. I'm just not applying it to that. But what he talks about is something that I find very helpful to me in thinking about leadership in God's people, whether the Old Testament or the New. And it's that God deeply cares about leadership. It's not a tangent subject. I don't think leadership is the most important subject, which is why I don't preach on it every week, right? The death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus is the most important topic, and that's why we talk about it more. But just because it's not most important doesn't mean it's unimportant. You see the distinction? Most important doesn't mean there's something that's unimportant. And leadership in the church is definitely important. It's significant to God. "And I will give you shepherds after my own heart who will feed you with knowledge and understanding." A couple of things out of that passage that are guiding my thoughts in this series of sermons. The first is that leadership is properly considered to be from God. It is a gift. It is not a mere mandate or requirement, although it might be considered those as well. It is a gift, a grace of God given to his people, that he does not leave us as sheep that have no shepherd. I love that God is concerned about what type of person will lead. This would be a whole different story if God had said, "I will give you leaders." Might be tyrants, but you'll have leaders, right? That's not what God said. He says, "I will give you leaders after my own heart." He is looking for a particular kind of person that is shaped by his will and his word to share knowledge and understanding with his people. And so as such, it's a sacred responsibility. This is the term used, you remember, for David, who was a man after God's own heart. It's a significant phrase. It doesn't mean flawless. David was a man of deep spiritual and moral flaws, but it does say something about the character of the man, that it's the kind of person that God is looking for. And then I also like the description of shepherds who feed. There's a lot of terms we use in church leadership, some better than others. Probably our term that we use the most would be an elder, or then subordinate to that we would use the word deacons for another role. Deacon meaning servant. Elder meaning old. Sorry, Bobby. No. But elder, really, quite literally, is just a description of the maturity of the person who holds that position. That's what the word literally means, just an older person, which might not tell you a lot about their job, right? If the job description was only to be eld, right, What does that mean? We don't know. Shepherd helps tell us something about it. And that word, this is an Old Testament passage, but that word is used again in the New Testament, translated sometimes as shepherd and sometimes as pastor, to describe that job of feeding and tending to the flock. It's a dirty job. It's a smelly job. Hit all the right buttons right. That's exactly what eldership is. It's a dirty, smelly job, but it's a tender and compassionate job as well. And I love that description that God has in mind. So with that said, this morning we're going to start the series by talking about the idea of one of the principles from that Jeremiah passage, and that the point being that leadership comes from God. What I started thinking in doing this series was, first of all, it was going to be very teachy. Sermons are a very particular kind of critter, right? You are putting together a thought and then trying to convey that thought and motivate people to do a certain thing in response to the gospel. Education falls in there somewhere, but that's not the primary job of preaching. Okay, teaching and preaching aren't exactly the same. But this series of lessons, by necessity, is going to be a little bit more teachy in that we're trying to understand some concepts from the Scripture, one of them being, what kind of leadership does God have in mind and what does he want us to know about it? So as I was thinking about that, I was thinking about that first and earliest church in Jerusalem in the book of Acts, and how they would have behaved and how they would have gone about the process of someone leading, beginning with the apostles and then later a job given to others. They were a church that didn't have any New Testament scriptures. For the first couple of decades, the church had no scriptures to reference. The books that we use, 1st, 2nd Timothy and Titus, to describe the eldership and deacons and so forth, hadn't been written yet, quite literally, for a couple of decades. And so they had the inspired teaching of the apostles, but they also had to lean heavily for their understanding of the idea of leadership of God's people on the scriptures that they had, which were the Old Testament scriptures. So that's where we're going to start for one lesson, is looking at the Old Testament concept of leadership and what would have been in the minds of the peoples taught by the apostles about the leadership in the church. And I think you'll find that a lot of it translates over to our New Testament practices very well. We're going to look at Numbers chapter 27 in a moment, but just before we get there, let me give you a concept about what's going on in the book of Numbers. If you're in our Wednesday night adult class here in the auditorium, we're doing a survey of the Pentateuch, the five books of the law, and we're fixing to come up on Numbers here in the not-too-distant future. But here's the very, very short version of that. The book of Numbers, besides being about numbers, and it is also about leadership. Or more specifically, really, 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 really bad leadership. In the sense that in virtually every chapter of Numbers, someone tries to wrestle control of leadership away from the person God had given it to. And there's a half dozen different stories, it's almost back to back through the book of Numbers, of people complaining about leadership, fighting over leadership, trying to take away leadership, condemning leadership, and every sort of thing in God's response to that. There's a reason that Moses is called the meekest of all men in the Old Testament. It's because of the book of Numbers. Somehow he survived. And in fact, usually he's the one saying, God, please don't destroy these miserable people. And sometimes God doesn't. And sometimes God does. Numbers chapter 16 is an example of this that I think just kind of characterizes the sort of thing that goes on in the people of Israel in Numbers, and all too often in churches, when people don't have a proper respect for what God is trying to do in leadership. Now, Korah, the son of Izhar, son of Kohath, Joseph, I could have given you this verse, wouldn't that have been fun? And now, Korah, the son of Izhar, son of Kohath, son of Levi, and Dathan, and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, son of Reuben, took men, and they rose up before Moses with a number of the people of Israel, 250 chiefs of the congregation, chosen from the assembly, well-known men. They assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, you have gone too far, for all in the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? When Moses heard it, he fell on his face, and he said to Korah and all his company, in the morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near to him, the one whom he chooses. He will bring near to him. The complaint, now think about the scene, okay, 200 more people than in the room this morning, every one of them a well-known man from Israel, every one of them a leader in his own right among his little clique. And they all come together and they stand up against Moses and they say, "You have gone too far." What's the accusation? "You've been presumptuous. You are lording it over us." It's a very democratic, democracy-oriented complaint, right? We're all holy. Every one of us ought to get a say in it, which is kind of funny. In America, one of our highest values is democracy and that everybody gets a say and so forth. In the Bible, that's not the most important thing. It's interesting, and it comes up from time to time, but in the Bible, that's not the most important thing, but sometimes it comes up, and here's somebody saying, "Hey, all of us should get a say. Everybody here is holy. Do you think you're holier than I am? Do you think you're holier than the other 249 of us? Who is holy? You've gone too far. You have put yourselves above the assembly." So Moses was in a position of leadership. People who weren't in a position of leadership saw that as a position of pride. They thought that Moses had put himself there. Hear the language? "You exalt yourselves." But how does Moses see it? If you listen carefully, first of all, Moses is deeply grieved because he recognizes how big a deal this is. I said earlier, leadership's not the most important thing, but it's still important. This is an example of that. Moses realized, here is a moment where leadership is very important and you're not getting it. And he is sad by what he knows is going to have to come about. It's a reckoning. Because by saying you have exalted yourself to a position of leadership, they're not really accusing Moses, they're accusing God, because God was the one who told Moses to do what he was doing. And so Moses says, "Here's what we're going to do in the morning, y'all come back, and God will show whom he has chosen." Hear the difference in language? Korah and his group says, "You exalt yourself." Moses says, "The Lord will show who is his and who is holy and will bring him near." The Lord's going to do the work. Leadership is a work of God. And to make sure we understand how severe it is, this is one of the more terrifying stories in the Old Testament. We're not going to read the rest of it, but skip down this afternoon and read. Start about verse 30 or so. In the morning, God says, "Good, you have them all gathered together? Great." And the earth opens up and swallows them and closes. And God says, "There we go." That is what God thinks of that sentiment toward leadership that says, you're exalting yourself. No one should be in that place. Everybody gets to say, everybody's going to run this show. God swallows them up, quite literally. The earth opened up. In fact, the text in the Hebrew says, the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them. Okay. Not the most important thing, but I dare say it's important. God apparently takes it very seriously. So this is what the book of Numbers is about, is this conflict back and forth, Moses and the people, Moses and the sons of Korah. Moses and Aaron and Miriam have a dispute about leadership in the book of Numbers. There's all these different conflicts and contrasts in who should be in charge, which leads us then to chapter 27, late in the book. If you're Moses and your entire career has been fighting with people about who's in charge, and you know that your life is coming to an end, what happens next? One of the concerns is, who's going to take it from here? Because if it's been a free-for-all while Moses was in charge, what happens when Moses is gone? A much bigger, bloodier, terrible free-for-all as everyone tries to take over leadership. So in this story, we want to read it beginning in verse 12 of Numbers 27, and just look at some of the key points out of this. Basic points, don't read too far. We're just going to take a little look verse by verse and see if we can understand what this story teaches us about leadership among God's people. Beginning in verses 12 through 14, the Lord said to Moses, "Go up into this mountain of Abarim and see the land that I have given to the people of Israel. When you have seen it, you shall be gathered to your people as your brother Aaron was. Because you rebelled against my word in the wilderness of Zin when the congregation quarreled, failing to uphold me as holy at the waters before their eyes. These are the waters of Meribah of Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin." So first of all, a couple of observations about this story, just to give you the quick rundown of what just happened, is God says to Moses, your time is coming to an end. You will not be going over into the promised land. You're going to get to go up the mountain of Abarim and take a look at Pisgah's lofty height. You can stand up there and look down and see what it is on the other side, but you're not going over. And he even tells him why. It's not just merely old age. Rather, this is a penalty, a consequence, because there had been a scene at the waters of Meribah, in another part of the story, where God had given instruction to Moses, and Moses had exalted himself. The very sin that people accuse him of, on one occasion he was completely guilty. God says to bring water from the rock, and he turns to the people and says, "Must we bring you water from this rock?" And takes the glory from himself. And that's exactly what God accuses him of here. He says, "You did not justify me before the people. You exalted yourself, so you're not going over." Three observations from this quick text. Number one, leaders do not replace God. Who ultimately is in charge of Israel in this story? It's not Moses. Moses ranks higher than everybody else. He's in charge of a lot. He's not actually in charge. Who initiates this conversation and says, "Here's what we're going to do next"? It's not Moses. The Lord says to Moses, "Here's what we're going to do." Leadership in God's people does not replace God. Leadership is not a group of people who says, "Here's what we're going to do next." Leadership is a group of people who listen to what God has for us to do next. It has a lot to do, as the passage in Jeremiah said, with passing on wisdom and understanding and knowledge from the scriptures, in our case. Considering what is the will of God. And taking that as the point of first priority. The first consideration in church leadership is not practicality or pragmatism, not our favorite business model. The first concern, and the final concern, and the concern all along the way and everything else we're concerned with, is what is the will of God, because leadership is never intended to replace him. Point number two from verse 13 is that Moses' career as leader comes to an end. Leaders do not remain forever. You in your life in churches and going to churches may have known a good church leader somewhere. Think back for a moment. Think about the best you ever knew. I don't even have to think very far. I go back to growing up in Seminole, Oklahoma. I like our elders pretty good here, but best I ever knew was a guy named Bill Parks in Seminole, Oklahoma. Quite literally quoted whole chunks of the scriptures in Bible classes. He was well known as a nuisance to preachers because as elder, it was also his job to call them up at odd hours of the night and say, "Hey, I've got a Bible question for you." And it would ruin their month because they wouldn't have the answer. And then he might. Quite often, he asked questions he knew the answer to. But anyway, besides being that, he was a fantastic role model and teacher in the church there. And then he died. I attended his funeral. He was the heart and soul of that congregation for decades. And then he died. Moses is the leader of this people, essential to everything they've done up to this point. And then he's going to die. And it doesn't even have to be death. There can be inability and other consequences and circumstances of life that prevent a leader. But the point is, all human leaders come to an end. They're temporary. They don't remain forever. You never get to a point in the life of God's people where you say, "There, finally, done. We picked out the perfect leader and we can forget about leadership from now on. It's taken care of." Leadership is a constant process of cultivating, shaping, maturing, and appointing new leaders. Because it's this constant process. As soon as we appoint a new leader, I start thinking about, all right, who's next? Not because I don't like the ones we have, not because any of us are dissatisfied necessarily, but because it's a constant process. People were dissatisfied with Moses, but that's not the reason he's going. It's because it's time for someone else, and God says so. And this is just a reality of the life of the church. We're always looking for the next group of leaders. And your time usually comes before you're ready, as it turns out. And then the next point in verse 14 is that leaders are not above failure. In this particular instance, it wasn't old age that was preventing Moses from his service. It was the consequence of one of his moral failures. Leaders are not above failure. We are not looking for flawless leaders. We have one. He is King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and he's the only one we get like that. David Lipscomb once wrote on the topic of eldership, a quote we're going to use in a lesson later on, that some people think these qualifications of elders are the qualifications of angels instead of the qualifications of men. He says, we don't have anybody like that. We are looking for people, and we know right off the bat, not only will some of them have failures, they will fail in the future and let us down, because that's what humans do. Moses was a good fellow, fought the good fight through the book of Numbers, still failed. God doesn't take away the leadership from him when he fails. He carries on for a time. There were consequences in time to come. But it's not an instantaneous lightning bolt from the sky. Aha, gotcha, leader. Zap. And Moses is done. He carries on and does the best he can and does an admirable job. But eventually the consequence comes due. So the 3 points I take from the earliest part of this story, 12 through 14, are these. Leaders do not replace God. Leaders do not last forever, and we're constantly in turnover and transition, looking for the next group of leaders, and leaders are not above failure. Those are the realities of human leadership among God's human people. And until we find a congregation of angels to replace ourselves with, that's the way it's going to have to be. That said, here's some good news about leaders. There's a plan for that. Let's look at verses 15 through 17. Moses spoke to the Lord, saying, "Let the Lord, the God of the spirits of all flesh, appoint a man over the congregation, who shall go out before them and come in before them, who shall lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord may not be as sheep that have no shepherd." Point number one in verses 15 and following is that Moses speaks to God in response. God initiates the conversation. Don't forget that. Leadership does not replace God. But in response to the mandate of God, Moses speaks to God and makes a request. Isn't that interesting? Now, Moses is a leader. Aren't leaders men of action? God says, your time's coming to an end. Doesn't Moses say, "Don't worry, I've got a plan in place already. We've got a 5-part plan. We're going to start this Sunday." That's not what he says. First thing he does is he prays about it, and he speaks to God. And he says, "God, we need you to give us leaders." As I said in the first part, in the last slide, leadership is a gift of God. And the day we take it upon ourselves and think it's a work of man, we take upon ourselves a weight that will crush us because it is too heavy. We ought to pray for leadership. I appreciate Edwin's prayer earlier. I hope a lot of you are praying the same sorts of prayer, praying for the leaders that we have, praying for the leaders that we will need in times to come. Leaders are a gift from God. Verse 16, that the God of the spirits of all flesh appoint a man over the congregation. We want God to do the choosing. Now, in some cases in the Bible, it's very direct. God says, "Let me give you a name." There he is. In our case, it's not quite so direct. He describes for the church, and we'll look at in later lessons, a type of person that we're supposed to be on the lookout for. And when you find that type of person, God says, "That's the one I want." But in all cases, leadership is a gift from God and ought to be prayed for. What is the purpose of leadership? We pray to God that leaders will lead so that we are not as sheep that have no shepherd. If you've ever been in a congregation that suffered from weak leadership or lack of leadership altogether, then you know exactly what this is describing. A congregation can be just as lost on Sunday morning as if they weren't coming at all. Just because you come together and there's a cross in the building and you call yourselves a church doesn't mean you know where you're going. And when you have inadequate leadership or leadership that doesn't exist at all, what you have is a ship without a captain. You have no direction on the local level. And we can be very pro-democracy and say, "Well, everybody's just going to figure it out. Everybody's going to pick up their Bible and read it, and everyone's just going to take care of it, and everybody will be good." In human history, that has never worked. Okay? So we've got to stop fooling ourselves and saying, "Well, everybody's going to be responsible and everybody's going to be mature," because that's not the way it works, especially in a congregation. I mean, think about our congregation. Is everybody here a mature disciple of Christ ready to self-navigate their life? Let me back up. Is anybody here a mature disciple of Christ ready to completely take the reins of their life and say, "I don't need help from anybody"? I mean, that's maybe a little extreme, but you get my point. In a congregation like this, we have some people that are sources of wisdom because of their life and knowledge and experience. We have children, literal and metaphorical, right? We have, in this congregation, we have tons of kids. Well, they need some direction. We have new converts and people who have not grown and matured in their faith. And I don't say that harshly. That's a great place to be. That's exactly where you're supposed to be if you are there. But they need leadership and guidance. There are some of us who have been in churches a long time who still get lost along the way. Because just because you know where you're going doesn't mean you actually get there, does it? And so the reality is that this idea that everyone's just going to take care of it, and everyone's going to do what they're going to do, and they're going to read the Bible, and we're all going to do fine, we'll just get together on Sundays and have a party, doesn't actually work out. We need leadership. We need someone who can speak into our lives and say, not that, Ben, this over here. People who can give us some direction and who can shape the group as a whole into something that none of us individually ever would have become alone. And that's the task of leadership. When leaders lead, the sheep have a shepherd. Without that, we certainly lack it. Now looking at verses 18 through 21, we get the final passage here in this story. So the Lord said to Moses, take Joshua, the son of Nun, a man in whom is the Spirit, and lay your hand on him. Make him stand before Eleazar, the priest, and all the congregation, and you shall commission him in their sight. You shall invest him with some of your authority, that all the congregation of the people of Israel may obey. And he shall stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before the Lord. At his word they shall go out, and at his word they shall come in, both he and all the people of Israel with him, the whole congregation. A couple of final observations about leadership from this paragraph, and then the lesson will be yours. Leaders are tasked with the job of leading. First of all, notice that God uses leaders to lead. What could we have done here? What could have God have done? God could have said, what we're going to do is I'm just going to call up Joshua, and he'll just show up one day and he'll be in charge. Anybody want to guess how that might have worked out? What you want in leadership is a generational transition. Leaders participating in the work of cultivating leaders. And so God doesn't say, I'm just going to have someone else show up on Monday and you'll be done on Friday. He says, here's what you're going to do. Moses, you're going to do it. You're going to go get Joshua, and you're going to get the high priest, and the two of you together are going to make this work. You're going to get the man. I picked the man. I gave you the man, but you are going to participate in this process. If you look in verse 22, you see it again. And Moses did as the Lord commanded him. He took Joshua and made him stand before Eleazar, the high priest, and the whole congregation. He laid hands on him and commissioned him as the Lord directed through Moses. God uses leadership to start looking for new leadership. All of us have a role in it. Wise leadership requests and begs and petitions the wisdom of everybody they can get, because it's a tough job for sure. But leadership should be on the lookout constantly for the next helping hand, the next leader, the next person that God puts in front of us. And that's one of the things that we see from this passage. Leaders need to be commissioned in verse 19. I love that word in the ESV, commissioned. He commissioned them. Other churches, and in Churches of Christ, we're not real keen on the word ordination. We don't use that. We appoint leaders. I don't know. If you want to know what the theological difference between ordaining leaders and appointing leaders, I don't know. But anyway, we prefer that word for some reason or other. But here it's a different word altogether. It's commission. But the point is that it has to be made a reality in front of the people and in front of the leader. Why can't we just say, oh, so-and-so takes the lead and we've never made it official, we just kind of let him go? That's chaos. How can a leader lead if he doesn't know he's a leader? How does he know what his job is? It's significant that when these leaders come to their task, we recognize what we've been talking about here today. Leadership is a gift from God. Leadership exists at the direction of God. Leadership exists to serve God. That's a reality, and we recognize that in some way. I think it's incredibly important. We don't have to get too formal about it. We don't have to have, again, a whole ordination ceremony or anything if we don't want. That's fine. But there needs to be some tool of recognizing these are the people that lead us. I am here and I submit myself to their leadership. Again, not a whole lot of formality needed for that, but a little bit, so that you can say that's the person. It has to be a recognizable position. We'll talk about that more in a future lesson, but I think it's extraordinarily important. In verse 20, leaders have authority. Now, I need 40 more minutes. Do you have 40 more minutes? That's why this is a six-lesson sermon or series, so we'll have to get to this later. Way too much and way too little has been said about the authority of elders. Okay, and so just allow me to elaborate on that in another passage. The important phrase here, Moses gave Joshua some of his authority. Joshua was not a second Moses. Moses stood supreme as lawgiver. Joshua didn't get to say, all right, here's commandment number 11. Never happened. But Joshua is not without authority. He has authority, not the same authority, but he has authority. Eldership in the same way. They are not Christ walking among us. They are not allowed to say, I know you've read it in your New Testament, but here's what I say. They are not allowed to do what even the apostles were forbidden to do, which was to instigate and invent doctrine without the specific direction of heaven. Okay, that's not allowed. That's not who you are. But they do have some authority. They have, we might say, some of the authority of Christ. They do not have the authority of Christ. They do not have identical authority to Christ. They have some of the authority of Christ because they are put as leaders by Christ in his church. And as such, we have some obligation to follow them. And sometimes that's going to be unpleasant. Everybody agrees on the authority of elders until they tell us to do something we don't like. And then we say, well, elders never have any authority anyway. Right? And that's pretty typical. There may be a church somewhere where the elders simply lead by example, and everyone agrees, and everyone follows, and nothing ever goes sideways. That's a magical unicorn. I've never seen it. I don't know if it exists. Maybe somewhere. It ain't here, okay? In reality, you get this many people with views and opinions and practices. Eventually, somebody's going to get sideways with somebody else, and somebody has to submit to somebody else, and God says, here's the way it works. Joshua, you have some of the authority of Moses. Elders, you have some of the authority of Christ. Not the authority of Christ, you have some. And as members, we're supposed to recognize that there is some measure of submission required of us to that. Another lesson will have to be required to explain what that means. But finally, we see a little bit of it in verse 21. Leaders ought to be followed. Remember what I said? Everyone believes in following elders until they say go that way and we don't want to. Someone's got to lead, which means it's our task to follow. Joshua's going to tell them when to go out. Joshua's going to tell them when to come in. Is everyone going to agree with Joshua? Here's a hint. They didn't agree with Moses ever. So I'm guessing Joshua had about the same run of things. We have four exceptional elders at this congregation that I love working with. Do I agree with every word they've ever said? Not likely. Will it happen in the future that we will disagree? Most probably. Because that's the way it works. You know what submission is? Submission is not being in perfect agreement or I leave. Submission is I respect their wisdom and knowledge enough to put mine down. That's what submission is. Submission is not when you force yourself into agreement. It's when you say, well, I don't quite see it that way, but I respect their wisdom and their knowledge in the Word of God, and I can submit to that. And I can go out when they say go out, and I can come in when they say come in. I can amend my one-year plan of sermons and do a special series they requested off my schedule because they asked, you see. That's the kind of thing we're looking for and more. It means they're going to be busybodies, not actually. But sometimes it'll feel like they're involved in your life more than you want. They're going to have opinions on things that we do when you'd rather just be left alone. That's part of their job, going out and coming in. Elders need to lead, which means the rest of us have some obligation to follow. There are lots of questions about how that works, and I'm going to take five more sermons to talk about it. But the main line is that this gift of God is a gift of Jesus Christ himself to his church, his beautiful body. And it is a blessing to have it among us. It is a blessing to cultivate it and to produce in the next generation a following group of elders and deacons and leaders. And we ought to be on the lookout for it. As one passage says, they have the care of our souls. And it is a precious task. This morning, I am privileged to be the minister of the Glenpool Church of Christ, put in a position by its elders to be the person on Sunday morning who preaches the gospel to you. And in that gospel is not just a body of leadership and form and structure, but also a saving call to be part of that life, to be part of that submitted community, a group of people that submit to their leaders and who live a life together in a shared faith. And it's a privilege for me to get to be part of it. And we'd invite you to be part of it too. In faith and obedience to the gospel, baptism into the one body, you become part of a people led by God and his leaders. And if you've not done that, we're going to extend the invitation as we stand and sing, "You May Come."